Good morning, everyone. This is your host, Lanisha Duke. I am excited to be with you today on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM, and streaming on the web at coastradio.org. Today, I am going to share with you the stories of three of my sheroes, Miss Marian Anderson, Miss Mahalia Jackson, and Miss Aretha Franklin. But for now, enjoy Wade in the Water by the Staple Singers. This morning, I am so happy to bring to you the Soul Experience. A couple of years ago, my good friend Watt Childress asked me to create something around soul music. I've performed this show at the Tolovana Arts Colony in Cannon Beach, the Hoffman Center in Manzanita, and at Tillamook Bay Community College in Tillamook. I will now share some of it with you today. I still invite you to call in and let me know what you're learning or anything that moves your soul in our hour together this morning. The number is 503-325-0010. I dedicate this show today to the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday is celebrated this month. His message of love is one that inspires me with every breath, and I hope you will take some time to find, give, receive, and share some love this month as well. I also dedicate this show to my husband, John Duke. I'm so thankful love brought us together. The soul of the Black experience, as we have come to know, in its evolution to what is now the African-American experience, there is the anguish, heartache, pain, and suffering of a people torn from its native grip to a foreign land. In that experience, the soul not only trembled with fear, it had to learn how to live in hope and love in spite of its harrowing conditions. So the songs began on the plantation field. Even though most of them couldn't read or write, they could have a song in their spirit. One that needed no explanation, every word and note giving breath to their next digging, picking, or even worse, their next beating. Even when the masters taught them about God as a way to convict them into further submission of their plight, they translated God into the savior, not of duty, fear, and submission, but of mercy, hope, and redemption. Even with the welts on their back, their children ripped from their mother's wombs, men killed for simply having eyes, there was a glimmer of hope, which was always singing in their souls. For over 200 years, beginning in 1619, slavery was the way in America. Enslaved Africans created their own unique form of expression known today as Negro spirituals. Gospel, jazz, blues, rock and roll, and eventually soul music evolved. The lyrics used in these spirituals for slaves to communicate with each other, teach their young, record history, and heal the pain. Frederick Douglass, a fugitive slave who became one of the United States' leading abolitionists, stated that African American spirituals told a tale of woe, which is altogether beyond feeble comprehension, and that every tone was a testimony against slavery and a prayer to God for deliverance from chains. He wrote, "The hearing of these wild notes always depressed my spirits and filled my heart with ineffable sadness. The mere recurrence, even now, afflicts my spirit. And while I am writing these lines, my tears are falling. To those songs, I trace my first glimmering conceptions of the dehumanizing character of slavery. I can never get rid of hatred of slavery and quicken my sympathies for my brethren in bonds." After slavery was a folks in this country still did not amount to much. Still, their songs rang of freedom, not just from the field, but freedom in their soul. Marian Anderson was born in 1897. Her grandfather was born a slave and had experienced emancipation in the 1860s. In 1903, W.E.B. Du Bois wrote, "One ever feels his two-ness, an American, a Negro. Two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body, whose dog strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder. The history of the American Negro is the history of this strive, this longing to attain self-conscious manhood, to merge his double self into a better and truer self. He simply wishes to make it possible for a man to be both a Negro and an American, being cursed or spit upon by his fellows without having the doors of opportunity closed roughly in his face. Unbeknownst to Marion, who began singing at the age of 6 at the encouragement of her aunt, she would become an early leader in breaking the barriers of racial discrimination in our country, with the advocacy and friendship of First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, who used her platform as First Lady to become a moral force during her husband's administration, promoting and advocating for social justice. Marian Anderson may have been born with a voice from God himself, but because she was also blessed with colored skin, she would first be denied acceptance to the Philadelphia Music Academy. Thankfully, that didn't stop her. With the support of her family, church, and community, she went on to study music privately. Even with her operatic ability as a renowned contralto, she never left her roots, singing spirituals in her concerts as well as arias. She once said, "I do not have to tell you that I love the Negro spirituals. They are the unburdenings of the sorrows of an entire race, which, finding scant happiness on earth, turns to the future for its joys. They are my own music, but it not for the reason that I love to sing them. I love them because they are truly spiritual in quality. They give forth the aura of faith, simplicity, humility, and hope." After achieving international acclaim in Europe, Marian made her way back to America. She was quickly reminded, even though she had a voice heard once in 100 years, she still couldn't stay in certain hotels and was not allowed to eat in certain restaurants. Because of this, Albert Einstein often hosted Anderson, first in 1937, when she was denied a hotel before performing at Princeton University. The year 1939 thrust Miss Anderson into the national spotlight after two events which helped change the course of history. First was the refusal by the Daughters of the American Revolution to perform at the Dar Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C., and subsequently the denial by the District of Columbia School District, with whom they tried to use as a backup performance venue. The Daughters of the American Revolution was an organization formed in 1890 after the Sons of the American Revolution refused to allow women to join their group. They began a practice of installing markers at the graves of the Revolutionary War veterans to indicate their service and adding small flags at their gravesites on Memorial Day. In 1939, the Daughters of the American Revolution adopted a rule excluding Black musicians from performing at their Constitution Hall, and it was entirely legal at the time. As a result of the DARS refusal of Marian, First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt resigned from her membership of the DAR in protest. At his wife's behest, President Roosevelt and Walter White of the NAACP, as well as Miss Anderson's manager, persuaded then Secretary of the Interior, Harold L. Ickes, to arrange an open air concert on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. On Easter Sunday, April 9th, more than 75,000 United Americans of all colors and millions around the country embraced the voice of Marian Anderson. And we will play for you now her singing, "My Country, 'Tis of Thee." Miss Anderson knew that if she had a purpose she could believe in, there would be no end to the amount of things she could accomplish. Even though she did not set out to be the face and voice of change, there she was. In 1955, she became the first African-American to perform with the Metropolitan Opera in New York. Although she never appeared with the company again, Marion was named a permanent member of the Metropolitan Opera Company. In 1957, Miss Anderson sang for President Dwight Eisenhower's inauguration and toured as a goodwill ambassador. In 1961, she sang for President John F. Kennedy's inauguration. In 1963, she sang on the platform during the infamous March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave his stirring I Have a Dream speech. She was also awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom that same year. In 1977, she received the United Nations Peace Prize and the Congressional Gold Medal. In 1980, the United States Treasury Department coined a half-ounce gold commemorative medal with her likeness. Personally, she was the hero of my mother, who as a young girl sang for Miss Anderson at Marian Anderson Elementary School in Compton, California. And she's the hero to countless girls and women of all colors around the country, still inspiring and her voice still ringing. In her best-selling autobiography, My Lord, What a Morning, Miss Anderson shares, "When I sing, I don't want them to see that my face is black. I don't want them to see that my face is white. I want them to see my soul. And that is colorless. I could not run away from the situation. I had become, whether I liked it or not, a symbol representing my people. I had to appear. Prejudice, sometimes it's like a hair across your cheek. You can't see it, you can't find it with your fingers, but you keep brushing at it because the feel of it is irritating. Fear is a disease that eats away at logic and makes man inhuman. None of us is responsible for the complexion of his skin. The fact of nature offers no clue to the character or quality of the person underneath. I have a great belief in the future of my people and my country. No matter how big a nation is, it is no stronger than its weakest people. And as long as you keep a person down, some part of you has to be down there to hold him down. So it means you cannot soar as you might otherwise." Marian Anderson died at the age of 96, a year after she moved to Portland, Oregon, to the home of her nephew, conductor James DePriest. Now, here's a bit of Marian Anderson performing Ave Maria. That was Miss Marian Anderson. This is your host, Lanisha Duke, on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM, and streaming on the web at coastradio.org. Next, I'd like to introduce you to Mahalia Jackson. Before Mahalia Jackson became known as the Queen of Gospel, she was simply a little girl named Mahala Jackson. Haley, her given nickname, was born on October 26, 1911, only 46 years after the abolishment of slavery. Little Mahala grew up in a home in New Orleans where 13 people lived in a three-room dwelling. At the time she was born, the neighborhood where she lived was called Niggertown. Her grandfather was a former slave and set a strict religious tone in their home. It was this strong Baptist upbringing that would lead Miss Jackson to never waver from singing gospel music. What was happening in the early 20th century? Even though Black people were no longer slaves on plantations, the suffering of Black folks hadn't really gotten any better. Poll taxes, literacy and comprehension tests, as well as residency and record-keeping requirements, prevented most from being able to vote. The Jim Crow mantra of separate but equal was becoming the culture in America's Deep South and even some Northern and Western states. Needless to say, Mahala had nothing more to look forward to than a life of servitude, though slavery was over. Miss Jackson's early life was hard. She was orphaned at age 5, and left with an aunt who was more like a drill sergeant than a parent. She and her brother were forced to work from sunup to sundown. After inspecting their home with the white glove method, a speck of dust would definitely mean a beating for Mahalia and her sibling. Little Haley also loved to sing, and church is where she loved to sing the most. Her Aunt Belle told her that one day she would sing in front of royalty, a prediction that would eventually come true. From a little church down in Louisiana, Mount Moriah Baptist Church in New Orleans, she used to sing gospel songs there. And an old man on the riverfront used to teach her songs. And that's how Miss Mahalia started singing gospel songs as spirituals and folk songs. In 1927, at the age of 16, Mahalia joined the Great Migration and headed to Chicago. Like many African Americans in the South, she moved to Chicago for better opportunities, but found only low-paying domestic work during the first several years there. Ever lifting her spirit through church and its music, Jackson joined the Greater Salem Baptist Church and began touring with the Johnson Brothers, Chicago's first professional gospel group. As a fish and bread singer, Jackson performed for donations in storefront churches, basement halls, and other makeshift venues. Later, she made tickets for her appearances, 10 cents each, and found work singing at funerals and revivals. During this period, Jackson made a vow that she would live a pure life free of secular entertainment. She promised to use her voice for the spiritual song, a promise that she kept. At one point, she tried singing the blues, but felt it didn't do much for uplifting the spirit. She often told people, once you finish singing the blues, you still feel depressed with the blues. 1929 proved to be a pivotal point in the life of Mahalia's music career. She met Thomas Dorsey, dubbed the father of gospel, and toured with him for 14 years. One of Dorsey's compositions, Take My Hand, Precious Lord, became Jackson's signature song. Even Elvis Presley recorded this song years later. Mahalia would eventually sing this song at Dr. King's funeral, and Aretha Franklin would sing it at Miss Marian Anderson's funeral. Miss Jackson first recorded in 1931, yet it wasn't until 1958 when she recorded Move On Up a Little Higher that she was catapulted into having, to that point, the most successful gospel recording in history. The composer, Reverend William Herbert Brewster, says he wrote the song because the fight for rights in Memphis was pretty rough on the Black church. And I wrote that song, Move Up a Little Higher. We'll have to move in the field of education, move into the professions, and move into politics, move into anything that any other race has to have to survive. That was a protest idea and inspiration. I was trying to inspire Black people to move up higher. Don't be satisfied with the mediocre. Before the freedom fight started, before the Martin Luther King days, I had to lead a lot of protest meetings. In order to get my message over, there would be things that were almost dangerous to say, but you could sing it. And here's Miss Mahalia Jackson encouraging us to move up a little higher. Everything Mahalia sang, she sang with great courage, conviction, and spirit. Three things that earned her the title of the Queen of Gospel. I remember my grandfather listening to her albums. Some of those hymns became some of my favorite songs. After earning success both in the U.S. and abroad, even garnering her own radio show, the first all-gospel hour on radio, the mustard seeds of anger and disappointment at the injustices of people of color, including herself, began growing After being one of the first Black women to host a radio show, a gospel show nonetheless, she could not understand why she couldn't have a television show as well. She was told the show would have to have a sponsor, and sponsors wouldn't take a chance on a Negro show because they were afraid that whites in the South would stop buying their products if the products were shown on a Negro program. Mahalia couldn't believe her ears. In the name of the Lord, what kind of people could feel that way? She asked. Mahalia was good enough to appear as a guest on the variety shows of other top entertainers like Dinah Shore, Steve Allen, and Ed Sullivan. She also was good enough to make short films of one song each for TV stations to use as fillers for their end of the day sign-offs, but she was never good enough to get her own television show. After 20 weeks, CBS canceled Jackson's radio show because it failed to secure a national sponsor. Around this time, word was coming from down south about a 14-year-old Negro boy named Emmett Till. In 1955, Emmett was accused of offending a white woman in her family's grocery store while he was visiting relatives in the Mississippi Delta. The woman accused him of whistling at her. A couple of days later, the woman's husband and his brother went to Emmett's great uncle's house and abducted the boy. They took him away and beat and mutilated him before shooting him in the head and sinking his body in the Tallahatchie River. His body wasn't discovered for 3 days. Emmett Till's mutilated body, shown to the world as his mother chose to have an open casket, became the face of the beginning of the civil rights movement. The brutality of the lynching, the victim's young age, and the acquittal of the two men who later admitted killing him shook the foundations of Mississippi and this country. And if you haven't heard this story before the lady who accused Emmett Till died, she confessed that she had lied about the whole incident. Then Rosa Parks, a seamstress in Montgomery, Alabama, had decided she was tired of giving up her bus seat to white folks and set off a citywide boycott. 50,000 Black folks had been walking or carpooling to work for months. The Montgomery bus boycott was the first sustained civil rights protest. Mahalia's mustard seeds of anger grew into a sprout. When Mahalia went to look for a home to buy in Chicago, she was told not to get her hopes up. White owners and real estate agents turned her away, claiming the house had already sold or they had changed their minds altogether. She finally found a house she wanted. She called up her agent and told him, "I'm a Negro and they don't want me in that house, but I want to buy that house." Again, they told her, "Don't think of paying in cash," but Miss Mahalia paid $40,000 for that house in cash. She helped change the landscape of the neighborhood. When she moved in, she was threatened by her white neighbors, but it didn't faze her. She entertained when she was home and for a while had extra police patrolling the neighborhood as shots were fired at her windows. Little by little, the white folks started moving out and Black folks started moving in. Mahalia never moved up without holding out her hand to help someone else move up a little higher. In 1956, Mahalia met Ralph Abernathy and Martin Luther King Jr., who would later found the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Soon after, they asked her to come to Montgomery, Alabama to sing at a rally to raise money for the bus boycott, as they hoped she would inspire people who had grown weary and discouraged. Dr. King once said, "In a sense, songs are the soul of the movement." In the midst of death threats, Mahalia performed a concert on December 6, 1956. Even though the Supreme Court had ruled that bus segregation was unconstitutional, the ruling had yet to be put in effect in Montgomery, so the boycott continued. When they returned to Abernathy's home after the concert, they found it had been bombed. By the early 1960s, gospel music and spirituals had become the inseparable soundtrack of the civil rights movement. Their greatest performer, Mahalia Jackson, had empowered the downtrodden masses with songs of strength and solidarity, inciting real change in America's social and political structure. Mahalia began to be a dominant voice in the civil rights movement. She never declined to have a concert or raise funds or to encourage her people to keep fighting the good fight. She appeared often with Dr. King, singing the sermonic selection before he preached. When Martin Luther King called on Mahalia, she never refused, traveling with him to the deepest parts of the segregated South. In 1963, Mahalia performed "How I Got Over" and "I've Been Buked and I've Been Scorned" before Martin gave his "I Have a Dream" speech. During his speech, Mahalia yelled, "Tell him about the dream, Martin." From that moment, Dr. King presented to the world his dream of an equal and just society. Mahalia had a voice that made people clap and tap their feet. Many would fall to their knees and weep. Others would pace the aisles in tears. Even sophisticated audience in reacting to the power of her voice were lifted. And now here she is singing How I Got Over. You're listening to The Soul Experience on Rural Race Talks. I'm your host, Lanisha Duke. Thank you for joining us today on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, and streaming online at coastradio.org. Don't forget to call in and let me know if you've heard something you didn't know or what is stirring your soul at 503-325-0010. Last but not least, I want to share with you the story of Miss Aretha Franklin. Aretha Franklin was born with a voice to bring life to anything that wanted to live. Born in 1942 in Detroit, Michigan, Aretha grew up in church at New Bethel Baptist under her father, Reverend C.L. Franklin. Her father was not only a minister, but a civil rights activist and was dubbed the man with the million-dollar voice. Guess the apple didn't fall far from the tree. Aretha began singing as a child, often before her father preached, songs like, "I know the Lord will make a way, and Jesus be a fence all around me." She stepped out into mainstream music at 18. Instead of initial success, Aretha received rebuke from church people for leaving her gospel roots to sing the devil's music. With her father's approval, Aretha continued her musical journey to become the reckoning force that catapulted her to becoming America's Queen of Soul. Miss Aretha once said, "From gospel to jazz is not disrespect for the Lord. I don't think that in any matter I did the Lord a disservice when I made up my mind 2 years ago to switch once. After all, the blues is a music born out of the slavery day sufferings of my people. Black music, at its very root, no matter how it may branch out, contains a divine spirit." It would be selfish to call her Black America's Queen of Soul, because Aretha's voice would break down any force coming against her simply for the color of her skin, especially considering she had the backing of an unusually funky white band in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, that helped her reach superstar status. With a range of hits from "I've Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You" in 1967, to "Do Right Woman," "Dr. Feel Good," and to the national anthem for anybody demanding respect. No matter what Miss Aretha sang, she took us to church. She combined gospel, jazz, and blues in a way that culminated the beauty, the heartache, and the everlasting love of life found deep down in our souls. Aretha, like Mahalia Jackson, became a voice of the civil rights movement, motivated by her love of God and her people. Whenever Martin Luther King Jr. called on her, she was there. She often donated money from her concerts to help the cause of her people. Aretha eventually found her way back to her gospel roots, with her most selling record of all time being a live recording at her father's church, with Reverend James Cleveland directing the choir and everyone in attendance feeling Jesus, whether they believed in him or not. Recorded in 1972, Amazing Grace sold over 2 million copies and is still her most beloved album, which also earned her a Grammy Award in 1973. With songs like "Mary, Don't You Weep," "Precious Lord, Take My Hand," and "Amazing Grace," even those recording the event, AKA church service, were moved beyond words. And here she is now singing Amazing Grace. Miss Aretha helped us solidify the notion that music was indeed meant to be felt. Whether it made you dance or cry, everyone had a soul that deserved to be moved. Soul is the celebration of triumph in the midst of enduring obstacles. If they can't keep me a slave, if Jim Crow laws can no longer separate me, then lie and tell me that I'm equal. If everything that has come to kill me ain't killed me yet, there lies my soul, the rhythm of life. Why is the soul experience so important to where we are today? Consider this. In a time where nothing could break the barrier of hatred, specifically because of the color of our skin, our music broke down the white-only doors in a way nothing else of the time did. When Marian Anderson was denied access to a room, her voice was then displayed for the world. While Mahalia Jackson was known internationally, she was still denied the right to buy a house, yet her voice led the civil rights movement. What came from the shores of Africa was a connection to the spirit of God, the universe, and nature, even as it settled in America on the banks of hell and damnation. Nothing but their soul could keep a people with an enduring strength to overcome the obstacles thrown at them, to keep them in bondage and considered less than human. Their voices continue to remind us that today, still, we shall overcome. I want to thank you for joining me in that journey down history's lane and how these three amazing women were able to overcome some of the hardest obstacles to achieve some of the greatest good for us all. And as we do celebrate Dr. King's holiday, his birthday this month, many of you know it's very special to me. When I first moved to the coast, I was actually quite shocked that no one celebrated Dr. King's birthday. And it wasn't because Dr. King was a Black man, but because his message of love is one that is universal. To me, it supersedes any language boundary, any color line, anything that can divide us. Love is the one thing that unites us. And so I want to share a little bit of his speech with you today. I say to you, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its various racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little Black boys and Black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. I thank you for our time together. I invite you to call in. We do have a couple or more minutes. if you want to share anything that stirred you up in your spirit today, I'd love to hear from you. But in the meantime, we have time for one more song. And so I am going to dedicate this to my husband. If I was performing this show live, I would be singing it live. But the original version of Miss Aretha Franklin will have to do. Here is Natural Woman.
We've got another call. You're on the air. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, Lanisha.
Hey, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, this is Victoria. Bringing back a lot of memories. I mean, I was coming of age and when Aretha was bringing us all along. And I want to tell you, I'm so happy that Reverend Warnock won in Georgia.
Is it official? Official?
Pity Pat.
Is that official? Official, Victoria?
Yeah, it's being called by all the major media, and he's ahead by enough votes. There will not be a recount. I don't know about the Ossoff race, but all the same, it's a historic event in many ways. So, anyway, that's all. Take care, you all.
That is good
Bye.
News, Victoria. Thanks.
Thank you. And, you know, I hope that we take, again, some time this month to really reflect on the message that Dr. King, that he lived and that he died for. Love can transcend so many barriers, so many misunderstandings, so many disagreements. And we are really in a time where, to me, it seems like love is the only thing that will bind us together.
We're going to try to squeeze one call in higher. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. You were wanting something that inspires people, and I have just a little saying that I look at almost every day to help me stay on track spiritually.
Okay.
Is there time?
Yes.
Okay. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that others won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us. It is in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. And as we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
Is the person that wrote that, does the name start with Marianne something?
Marianne Williamson. She tried to run
yes.
for president.
I knew it. I was like, I know where that came from. You
yep.
know what? Thank you so much for that affirmation to close out our show. That was just what we needed.
Thank you for doing your show.
Thank you so much. Again, this is Lanisha Duke with Rural Race Talks. I really thank you guys for joining me every month. Don't forget to join us next first Wednesday in February. If you want a feel-good song, find it on YouTube, The Power of Love by Luther Vandross. It's one of my favorite songs to celebrate the true power of love that lives within us all that we can spread out into the world. God bless you, and I love you.